Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Join us today on Advanced as we head north, way north. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. Today is June 6th, and we're beginning our travel article today, which I know a lot of us really enjoy. I'm Naomi, and I'm especially excited today, being a Canadian, that we are talking about Canada. However, I have to admit that this part of Canada is not an area that I'm very familiar with myself. We are going really, really far north, basically as far north as you can go. And it's an interesting adventure, lots of different aspects to visiting this part of the world. And with me to help us learn more about it, first of all, we have our resident Canadian travel expert, maybe travel expert in general, Lois, welcome.
Oh, thanks for the nice welcome and friendly welcome there, Naomi. It's great to be here. And can't say that I've been way up to the top that we're going to talk about today, but I have been definitely in very northern Canada, and my husband has flown in this part of the world.
You actually lived in a northern part of Canada for a while.
That's right. What a northern civilization part of Canada. And it was in Thompson, but also spent some time getting to see Churchill and that area and then flying even further north than that.
Okay, so probably most of our listeners aren't really familiar with that, but Churchill is considered the polar bear capital of the world, isn't it?
That's correct, and we did a talk on Churchill a few months back now, maybe even half a year back now.
Right, so have you ever seen a polar bear?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Yes, and it was came into town, it was at the dump, I could see it in the distance, and that's as close as I wanted to be.
Why is that?
Because, you know what? They aren't friendly, and they actually stalk humans. And they do stalk humans, and a lot of people don't realize that. They think they're a nice little teddy bear.
Well, they look so cute and cuddly and soft and warm, but they are pretty mean. They really are bears, and so we have to keep that in mind as we learn about them. Also with us, Bill Quinn, you've been pretty far north as well.
Yeah, I've actually been up to Alaska. I made it up to just about in the middle, if you look at the map there on page 16, up to Denali National Park in Alaska. So, and it was great. It was wonderful to be up there, but it's definitely very rugged.
Okay. Yeah. Explain more about that.
Well, you know, it's living in the city, it's really hard to, you know, figure getting so far away from everything to where actually, and Lois knows about this, in Alaska and also in many parts of Canada, there are no roads. They have to fly from village to village, so you just can't get in the car and drive places.
Right. They can't actually build roads in some parts of the world because it's so cold that it just doesn't work. Everything breaks.
Yeah. So, and the weather is so unpredictable that you can't really be driving anywhere. And so you might go in some of these places and not see, you know, outsiders from the village for months and months.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Someone else who has a little bit of experience going north, Simon.
Yeah, it's great to be here. I have to be honest right from the beginning. I have not been to northern Canada, though I am a Canadian, but I have seen snow and I have felt cold on several, you know, different occasions. And also, I have seen polar bears on the Canadian $2 coin. And so I am familiar with what they look like. And I hope to be able to contribute to our discussion today.
Simon, I think we're in the same boat. I'm also Canadian, but I have not been this far north. And Canada is already very cold, very northern. There are parts of the year where you get a lot of snow, but it's a little different in the southern part. And actually, most Canadians don't ever go very far north, do they?
I certainly have avoided it. For all of the years of my life. Yeah, they say most Canadians spend most of their lives very close to the U.S. border.
Right. And what's the reason for that?
It's a lot warmer in the U.S. The warmth sort of comes across the border, and Canadians like that.
Right. So this really is It's like a wilderness. It's a place that most people do not have the opportunity to go to. And in fact, if you do want to go, it's also quite expensive. And we'll cover that a little bit later on in the article as well, discuss that a bit. But let's get started on our nature cruise through northern Canada on page 16 of your June Advance magazine.
A nature cruise through northern Canada. In the icy Arctic, not everything is frozen. We were bobbing gently in water off Cobourg Island in the Canadian High Arctic way too early in the morning, watching thousands upon thousands of thick-billed murres cling to impossibly high cliffs. This is one of the Arctic's best bird colonies, with murres, northern fulmars, guillemots, kittiwakes. The birders were going crazy. And then we spotted the bear. He was healthy and young, maybe 3 or 4 years old. Perched on a thin, crumbly ledge, he watched the birds intently, mouth open, teeth showing as birds flew past. He was raiding the nests for chicks. Our bear stepped gingerly from rock to rock and at one point did a bodybuilder pull-up to reach a higher shelf. In 30 trips up here, I've never seen a bear in a bird colony, said Matthew Swan, owner of Adventure Canada, the company running our cruise ship, Clipper Adventurer.
So when we think of taking a cruise, most people think of islands, palm trees, warm water, diving. How about this idea of a nature cruise through northern Canada?
Well, it's quite different, Naomi, because the bobbing gently in water off Cobourg Island, and it is freezing. I mean, it's almost, you know, the water's not ice yet, but it is really cold, and you better be bundled up to stay warm.
Right. We see in the icy Arctic, not everything is frozen. So it does get very cold there, but at certain times of the year, enough things are accessible. You know, the ice does melt somewhat and you can get through and visit different areas. So they're bobbing gently in water off of Cobourg Island, which is highlighted there on the map for us. Way too early in the morning. Why are they up so early, Lois?
Well, I think they want to see something, Naomi. And I also think if some people are up way early in the morning, it is also for the sunrise. But it also says they're watching thousands upon thousands of thick-billed murres cling to impossibly high cliffs. And maybe that is quite possibly the best time in a 24-hour day to see these birds.
Okay, and what are they? Sorry.
They are called thick-billed murres.
A type of bird?
A type of bird.
Okay.
That's right.
And so they want to watch those. They want to get the best view possible of these creatures. And we discover in the next paragraph that this is a good spot to see them.
That's right. This is a bird colony, which is kind of an interesting term. Usually when we hear the word colony, we're talking about people, right? Not birds.
True. So all these birds live together in this area. And it's not just these murres that we were talking about.
No, we see there in line 8, Naomi, there's a bunch of other birds there along with the murres. Northern fulmars, guillemots, kittiwakes. And it is just it's like a United Nations of birds up on this cliffside.
All the birds are hanging out together. This is where the bird party is.
Yeah.
What's that saying? Birds of a feather flock together? We got them here.
Yeah, well, we got them all.
And not only are the birds active, but we see there in line 9, some other creatures are active.
The birders. What's a birder?
Oh, I can't believe you guys haven't met birders. That's those people you see wearing outdoor clothes and carrying binoculars and big cameras, and they're waiting to catch a glimpse or take a picture or see rare birds.
I have seen birders in action now that I think about it. Yeah. We had a rare species of bird fly into a tree near our office and build a nest there a few months ago. And people were visiting from all over the city, you know, just waiting to take a picture of this creature. So people do get pretty excited if you're a bird watcher.
Yeah, it's very interesting. In certain parts of Canada, not just this part of Canada, if you're going for a visit, if you go down to the southern part of Canada, right down to the very, very tip, and go to Pelee Island and Pelee Point, you will see birders everywhere.
Yes.
And I mean everywhere. And you will see such a variety of birds like you've never seen in your whole entire life.
Mm. But even up north, there's quite a variety. We read that there were many different kinds of birds. But that's not all.
Well, there's these birds, and then, uh-oh, there's a bear we see in line 10.
Now, this isn't just a scary moment here. This is a very surprising moment. Birds and bears don't usually hang out together. They are not birds of a feather.
That's right. This was not predictable by the birders or anybody who's visiting this area. This just doesn't happen.
Right. Now, we see that our writer managed to get it on camera. On page 17, we see the polar bear right there, you know, crawling around these cliffs with the birds. It's amazing. How is this bear described, Simon?
Well, they tell us he's not very old, maybe 3 or 4 years old, but they also say he's healthy and young. And when they talk about what he's doing, they basically use a lot of words that describe him climbing around. They say he's perched on a thin, crumbly ledge. And usually we use that word perched when we're talking about a bird sort of standing on a branch or kind of holding on, trying not to fall, right?
Right. So he's right on the edge, and it seems a little dangerous because polar bears are heavy.
Yeah, and he's on a crumbly ledge, which means there's cracks in the rock. It's falling apart under his weight. He's gently making his way along, and he's looking at these birds like they're going to be lunch or dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, teeth showing, mouth open. He's almost drooling as he sees all these birds. Mm-hmm. He can't wait to get one for his
breakfast. I keep wondering if he thinks his mouth open, they're just going to fly right in there, Naomi.
Well, our author explains in more detail exactly what he's up to.
He was raiding the nests for chicks. And now, first off, you know, what he's doing is he's not necessarily looking for the mature birds. When we say chicks, he's looking for either unhatched eggs or the recently hatched eggs, the helpless birds, the little baby birds that are going to be stuck in the nests and can't fly away.
Mm-hmm.
They're easier to catch when they can't fly.
Right. So this bear, they start to refer to the bear as our bear. Why are they doing that, Lois?
Well, because this bear is part of their adventure.
Right.
And it says that the bear stepped gingerly from rock to rock and at one point did a bodybuilder pull up to reach a higher shelf. So obviously this bear is very entertaining for them as well. And they like this part of the adventure.
Right. He's entertaining. He's very athletic.
Yeah, that's amazing to do a bodybuilder pull-up. Just imagine, we might call these like chin-ups or mm-hmm. something. If there's a bar, you put your arms up, grab it with your hands, and you actually pull your body up just with your arms. It's very difficult to do.
It is.
You know, for a bear, too.
Well, they're even heavier than we are.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right, so he's also stepping gingerly. So he's almost like a dancer, you know, trying to gently go from spot to spot, make sure he doesn't slip or make a false step. So it's pretty amazing to see, not just for the visitors.
Yeah, that's right. The birds obviously aren't very used to this, or they wouldn't be leaving their nests around, right? It also says here that Matthew Swan, who's the owner of this tourism company called Adventure Canada, he's been up to this area 30 times and he's never seen a bear in the bird colony.
So this is a very unusual sighting. And the reason why it's so unusual is that before it was kind of rare for this to be happening. The polar bears wouldn't always be in the same climate as the birds would be. But certain times of year, and also certainly with global warming, it's happening more and more.
Yeah, typically polar bears, their main source would be to hunt for seals out on the ice, in holes in the ice where the seals come up to breathe, and they would just hang out there waiting for the seals. But because of some melting going on, there are not as many areas that are iced over. The bears now obviously are feeding on fewer seals, and they have to find other sources of food.
Right. So it's an unusual sighting. Pretty amazing to see. And I have to say, that picture on page 17, I could just look at it for days. It's incredible, all the different birds and that beautiful polar bear. But let's continue, because this was just the beginning of their trip. Let's find out more.
disastrous explorations. And this was just the start of our 9-day trip through the high Arctic. Our cruise took us to tiny, remote Inuit villages, along with all the infamously disastrous sites of failed 19th century polar explorations. First came assorted islands, where all those explorers met such awful ends. There was the expedition of Englishman John Franklin, who was looking for the Northwest Passage. When he failed to return, it was the unsuccessful rescue missions that actually wound up mapping a good portion of the high Arctic. As for Franklin and his men, it's thought that lead poisoning played a part in their deaths. Lead was used then as a solder for canned food. There was also an American expedition, which failed because the American military ships didn't leave supplies as planned. Only 7 of the original 26 were still alive when rescue finally arrived.
All right, so we're getting into a little history of this region here, and it's quite fascinating. Our subtitle is Disastrous Explorations, and that word disastrous, Lois, what does that mean?
That's a good word, Naomi, and it's in our vocabulary focus. And it says disastrous, something that is disastrous is a complete failure. So it didn't come together like you anticipated it would.
Right. And that is true with a lot of explorations that have happened over the many years of exploring in our history. There have been a lot of people who went on a mission to go one place and ended up in another country altogether, or who were looking for one thing and couldn't find it.
You sound like you're describing the adventures I have with my sister. We always end up in these disastrous situations.
Nice. All right. Well, when it comes to the Arctic, we'll discover some of that in just a moment. But this was the start of a 9-day trip through the high Arctic on this cruise.
Yeah. And on the cruise, it took them first to a tiny, remote Inuit village, or actually several Inuit villages, along with some of these other places where some of these explorations did not end well.
Right. So that word Inuit is a very interesting one, isn't it, Simon?
That's right. It's, I guess, the preferred name for this group of people who live in the Arctic. They're probably most famous for things like igloos. That's those houses made out of snow. And maybe you've heard about them hunting whales in the news.
Dog sledding.
Sometimes, though, in English, you'll hear people use a word Eskimo. That's spelled E-S-K-I-M-O. And in Canada, anyway, that is not the preferred term. It's sort of an offensive term for this group of people, although I understand that it is used in other parts of the world without meaning to cause any offense.
Right. So the Inuit are a group of people who live in that region who are native to that area. They're Aboriginal tribes in Canada. We sometimes also refer to the people who originally were in Canada as First Nations. So this is one group of First Nations citizens of Canada. So the cruise took them to these little villages, which I'm sure is really interesting, a lot of fascinating culture, and you'll see a couple of pictures of people from those villages. But they also went somewhere else, didn't they?
Yes, to these infamously disastrous sites of failed 19th century polar explorations. Now, I actually underlined both those words, infamously and disastrous. Infamously means it's very well known, but for not good reasons.
Exactly. Okay, so these explorations went south, so to speak. The explorations north went south.
Yeah, they were hoping to go north, but they went south. And when we say they went south, that means they failed.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, things went upside down. They didn't go the way they were supposed to. And if we turn over to page 17, we discover a few more specifics on these tales.
That's right. It mentions that this didn't happen in just one place. It says, rather, they went to visit these assorted islands where all of these explorers met such awful ends. And so these expeditions didn't just end badly, they ended terribly.
Right. Okay. First of all, describing islands as assorted is kind of a fun way to talk about it.
Yeah, I found this very fun when I was preparing for this because our vocabulary focus says assorted, Now, I think of chocolates, but they say here assorted, consisting of various types mixed together. So I guess that's why I thought of a box of chocolates.
Right.
But here we have an assorted variety of islands.
Right. We could also say something like, oh, we have some assorted options for your menu choice today. You know, anything where there's a bunch of very different things all grouped in one place.
Right. Exactly. Like for me, you could say assorted jewelry, right,
there
Naomi?
You go. All right. So all those explorers met their end. In other words, they passed away there. And the first one that we mentioned, Bill.
Right. We see there was the expedition of Englishman John Franklin. We've got a drawing there of John Franklin, rather handsome guy there. And he was looking for the Northwest Passage.
Okay. Now, Simon, what is the Northwest Passage?
Well, the Northwest Passage is a sea route through the Arctic. So it's a way boats can travel around the northern part of Canada. And it's kind of famous among Canadians because most of the time it's so full of ice that you can't really take anything through this passage.
Well, I believe that they actually wanted to make this Northwest Passage their route from Canada, parts of Canada, to like even Asia and India. So you can see where they would want to head up Hudson Bay, angle northwest, and that would be the shortest route to ship cargo.
Right. So it's a good plan, but unfortunately, John Franklin did not return. And so we see on line 9 that they had to try to find him, right, Lois?
That's right. It said it was unsuccessful rescue missions. So they did try to find him that actually wound up mapping a good portion of the high Arctic.
Can you explain what that means?
Okay. So they went to go find John Franklin. So their first course of action is to find this explorer. But instead, they actually find a way of telling people where this is and how to get around this area. And so they mapped it.
That's right. If you look at the map on the top of page 16, you can see that there are a lot of these little assorted islands. And at the time, of course, they didn't have maps or satellites. And so no one really knew where John Franklin had gone. And so they needed to make sure they weren't searching the same places over and over again.
Now, you're familiar with this search already, aren't you, Simon?
One of the failed searches, yeah. Yeah, it's true. My great-great-grandfather was sent to look for John Franklin. One of the first stops is in Canada.
Wow. Simon's cool. A part of history.
Did he return?
He did return, but without John Franklin.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
It does sound like all these rescue missions were unsuccessful. What happened to Franklin and his men?
Well, it says here in line 11, as for Franklin and his men, they're not quite sure, but they think that lead poisoning led to their death.
Can you explain about lead poisoning?
Yeah, well, lead poisoning is actually, you know, we would use lead to, here we say, seal cans. They would actually use it, like they would heat it up to seal metal containers. They would actually use lead. Unfortunately, though, some of the lead ends up getting consumed and it leaks into the food and the liquids.
Right. And, you know, a lot of us have maybe heard about lead paint. This was still used until quite recently. People didn't understand how poisonous lead was, just how bad it was for you. And so it was used in all kinds of ways that we would never allow today because we know the bad things it can do. But at this time, lead poisoning, it could happen quite easily.
Yeah, and at that time it did happen quite easily, quite often. And so they think this is what happened. They consumed some of the lead while they were on this expedition, and actually it poisons the body, gets in the blood, and then all sorts of terrible things happen, and people die fairly quickly from it.
Right. Yeah. So not only does it affect you physically, it might affect your brain a little bit too, which could explain why these guys maybe took a wrong turn somewhere.
Made them go crazy. Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Okay. That's right.
Now, we have a special treat. Simon, being so familiar with this story, also has a song to share with us. So,
woo-hoo!
Let's
yeah.
hear it.
Oh, for just one time, I would take the Northwest Passage to find the hand of Franklin reaching for the Beaufort Sea, tracing one warm line through a land so wild and savage, and make a northwest passage to the sea. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah. Oh, so good,
thank
Simon.
You.
Very good.
That was beautiful.
Special effects by our sound guy, Marco. All right. So it's a kind of a famous story, but there are some maybe less well-known stories as well. It wasn't only Canadians who were interested in making a way up there.
No, we see in that next paragraph there was an American expedition. That failed also and got complicated because the American military ships didn't leave supplies where they were supposed to.
Right. And so, in fact, they had a group of 26 people head up there. And in the end?
Only 7 of the original 26 were still alive when rescue finally arrived. So another sad story, really.
Yes. And these missions were, I mean, they were nearly impossible. Even today, taking this kind of trip is, it's a bit of a risk. I mean, it's not an easy thing to do.
No, it's not easy. I was thinking about that even today. Now, these guys, of course, they had no GPS. They had no satellite photos.
They had no downfield jackets.
Oh, that's true, right.
They had no cell phones. So they were just out there. And very easy, because of the ice, for them to get lost. Well, it's interesting. This expedition actually was led by a lieutenant colonel or something in the Army, Adolphus Greely. And he was one of the 7 that actually survived. And it began about 1881, 1882. So this is 130 years ago. That's how far back they were. One interesting thing about it is he was rescued and survived. He actually lived till 1935. So the guy lived another 50 years after this near-death experience. He was one of the lucky ones.
That's right. They were really up there several years, though, waiting to be rescued, sort of living out on the ice. So I'm sure there are a lot of amazing stories attached to this that would be well worth finding out more about.
Well, we have more amazing stories in this article, so I hope you'll stay tuned, come back tomorrow, and learn more with us. But until then, there's more that we offer here at Advanced. You can find us online, right, Lois?
Sure you can, at www.studioclassroom.com.
That's right. You can check out our English corner, the discussion questions for every article, and of course, Topic Talks.
Right. Make sure you check out Topic Talks. We've got summaries, insights, and features. And there's one other place they can go, right, Simon?
Yeah, they can visit us on Facebook.
Yeah, we always check out the Facebook page. We'd love to hear your comments and feedback. Let us know what you think, and we'll see you again tomorrow.